effort. In that House proceeding that a lot of people around the world watch, one member of Congress after the next, who are accused of and implicated by the corruption investigation, stood up to Eduardo Cunha and said, Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, I vote yes to impeach Dilma Rousseff because we can't tolerate corruption. Speaking to somebody with millions of dollars in bribes in Swiss bank accounts. And so people have started to realize internationally, but also here in Brazil, that although this impeachment process has been sold, has been pitched as a way of punishing corruption, its real goal, beyond empowering neoliberals and Goldman Sachs and foreign hedge funds, the real goal is to protect corruption.
That's Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept speaking last week in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking tonight at the First Parish Church Meeting House in Cambridge at 6:30, then Wednesday night in Montclair, New Jersey at Congregation Shomer Emuna, on Thursday night at Barnes & Noble Union Square in New York, and Friday I'll be in Washington, D.C. at Plymouth Congregational Church. Then for the weekend, it's on Saturday to Portland and Bangor, Maine, Sunday to Bar Harbor, Maine. And Democracy Now! Has job openings, video news production fellowship, and our internship program. Check out democracynow.org. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan and our crew. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
A few safety tips for motorists from the League of American Bicyclists. Make sure you safely pass bicycles. Give them 3 feet of passing room if you're driving a car, 6 if you're behind the wheel of a truck. And remember, bicyclists have the same rights as you do, so yield to them as you would any other vehicle. Visit BikeLeague.org for more safety tips. Whether you ride or drive, please share the road.
During this warm season, we'd like to remind all bicyclists to take safety along for the ride, too. Wear a helmet, approach intersections with caution, yield to pedestrians, and stay as far to the right as possible. Remember, motorists often don't expect bicyclists to be on the roadways. So enjoy the beautiful weather that's in our future and ride with caution. And take safety along for the ride, too.
Come listen to our radio show.
Mixtape Radio, every Wednesday night at midnight.
Until 3 a.m. Thursday morning.
Featuring the newest and the best in indie, alternative, and experimental music.
With your hosts, Jeff.
And Christine.
So tune in.
It's really gonna go down.
Yes, tune in. That's Mixtape Radio. Right now, it's 6:01 on WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 on the frequency modulation band. And that can mean only one thing, that it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, we're here. We're here. This is Off the Wall. I am Kyle, and your host, Emmanuel, is right here.
I am. Here I am, over on the other side of the room.
There you are. Through the magic of radio.
Oh, it's not so magic. It's just basic circuitry.
Nuts and bolts.
Somehow it flies through the airwaves. Here we are. Another hour of action-packed adventure as we try and figure things out and share what we learn. I learned something yesterday. You were there when I learned this. I learned that pineapples grow in the ground. I'm not embarrassed to say that I thought pineapples grew in trees until yesterday when we were in a grocery store and you bought a pineapple. And I was pointing out at the time that, you know, you never see anybody actually buying a pineapple.
It's awkward. It's awkward.
But in a cartoon of a supermarket, the person in the supermarket always has a pineapple. It's just, it looks good in a cartoon, I guess.
Yeah.
But in real life, no one ever goes and buys, because it's awkward to carry, yes.
It's spiky. It's dangerous.
For some reason, it wants to hurt you. but we had an extended conversation about pineapples, much to the annoyance of the people behind us online. But
well, you pointed it out. It was a good point. I mean, you really don't often see people walking around with them. How do you hold it?
I did a little informal poll. Does anybody here have a pineapple? Nobody had a pineapple.
Do you support the head like you do a small child?
I don't know why people are so touchy about being asked if they have a pineapple on their person. You got the best pineapple in the store, I think.
Thank you. And I accept that acknowledgement.
But that led to the conversation of me saying, you know, it's funny, isn't this the fruit with the spikes and all that falls out of a tree and hits people on the head? And, well, apparently coconuts do that. They don't grow on the ground, right? They grow on trees. They fall and they hit people. I don't know what the point of that is. But I really thought that pineapple, I mean, it looks like the kind of thing that would be in a tree, doesn't it? But you said no. These things are on the ground. And those little leaves, they have a special look to them. I've never in my life seen a pineapple field. So, you know, this is the cause of my ignorance. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know where. You said Hawaii is where they grow the things. I've never been to Hawaii, the one state I've not been to. So that's why there's this massive gap in my knowledge base.
Well, you'll have to take a trip and actually see a pineapple growing operation yourself. But it's a small tree, if it's a tree at all, but it's very low to the ground.
Wait. Now it could be a tree?
No, I mean, it would be a tree stub, smaller than a stump.
I thought it's like onions. You pull them up out of the ground. There's a pineapple there. Are you saying it's not? Well, boy, my ignorance just keeps getting bigger and bigger. But
well, the fruit sort of separates like between what is underground, like the roots, and then the flower and leaves are on the top, and then the fruits, I guess, in the middle. So it would be sort of a tree. I don't think so.
You don't know
no.
either, do you?
Well, now you're putting me on the spot. You're like making me have to be an expert, but they don't like
you have
grow
to be an
in
expert
bunches.
To know if it grows underground or not. That's
grow
an expert.
Individually, like a bush. It'd be more like a bush.
Pineapple bush. You know, I don't think that's too far off from a pineapple tree. So I don't feel nearly as dumb as I did before. But I honestly still don't know.
Well, it wouldn't fall because it's already on the ground.
Okay.
Put it that way.
All right. Unless you're like a small dog or something that happens to be underneath it.
Those don't count as dogs in the first place.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so we have a pineapple, and you know, that pineapple's going to be sitting there. I just know it's going to be sitting there because I don't know what to do with a pineapple. What are you supposed to do with the things? How do you even open them? I don't know how to do that.
It's a very delicate process. First of all, they can keep for a while, so we'll just like let it ripen,
so to speak. We'll keep checking in every week, every month, on the status of the pineapple.
No. But it's a good fruit, so we're going to explore. Pineapples are good for you. Come on.
I don't even know how you would slice it with those spikes, you know, because it's trying to hurt you as you. It doesn't want you to do that, clearly. And that's another thing. Why does that fruit feel it has to protect itself that much? A peach doesn't do that. An apple doesn't. They want birds and all kinds of other animals to partake.
No, you're right. It is a really defensive fruit.
Why is a pineapple such a prick about it?
Ooh.
Well, I'm just saying.
No, you're right.
It's a big keep off my fruit sign.
Yeah, hands off. Don't touch.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that. They're real full of themselves.
Attitude problem is what it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we went to the grocery store. Always fun when we go to the grocery store.
Well, and we were probably the most stealthy of all pineapple pickers in a grocery store.
Uh-huh.
We were in and out. Nobody even knows, except for now, because we used the miracle that is WSB to broadcast that. And, and we're happy to be here. We've got quite a show. We're ready to go.
We do have quite a show. I went through and found all kinds of news stories that were interesting and enlightening to share with the audience tonight. They're still sitting on the printer tray.
Oh.
Yeah.
They didn't make it out the door.
You know, we're always so rushed, and I'm always saying I'm going to forget something, and yeah, that's... I didn't forget the stories, didn't forget to print the stories. I only forgot to take the stories. There are good stories, too. There's some interesting things going on out there, you know?
That's a tough part of the workflow to...
Wish I could memorize them.
I've forgotten. Yeah. We'll save them.
Well, they'll be out of date. Tomorrow they're out of date.
It's,
you know,
true.
The news, it moves fast, Kyle. You know, you got to be on the story. No one reads yesterday's news.
Well, maybe if you think of it, we can anecdotally, we'll add a little color to it and then bring some stories back in a following episode of the show.
Well, actually, I'm one step ahead of you. What I did was I went to the websites that I went to get the stories in the first place right here because we have internet connectivity in the studio.
Wow.
Many people don't know that. And
it's important to actually have the connectivity when you want to use the internet.
Yeah. I've often said similar things to that. Now, but here's the thing, though. This story is kind of something that we've been saying for a while. We've been talking about how the conversation in the political realm this past year, well, there's been some idiocy, obviously, but there's also been some intelligent dialogue. And, you know, for the people out there that are saying, oh, Bernie, why are you such a pain? Why are you trying to get in the way of Hillary? And it's just, you know, wasting time here. We should be united. And my response to that, I think your response to that as well, is that it's part of the dialogue. You have to have the conversation. You have to bring these issues up. And what Bernie Sanders has been doing is talking about these things in prime time to the entire country. Things like healthcare, things like foreign policy issues that don't quite add up. Things like socialist agendas that many people would accuse him of, since he is a socialist. But basic human rights, basic things that we should be talking about that we never do, because the mainstream doesn't bring these things up.
Right. The mainstream topics are more like gadflies, just things that are just ever present, and it's only these little short glints and glimmers of real discourse, but it's always for the wrong topic.
Yeah.
And it gets way too much actual attention, while other real issues languish, like infrastructure, you know, a la Flint, Michigan, or mm-hmm. wherever else the need is. And there is great need in our country. So I am absolutely with that as far as keeping it about real issues that we're all basically looking at having to face the effect of paying for, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, now imagine if Bernie had taken the advice and just united behind Hillary, and that was the case for the last few months. We wouldn't have had these debates, these conversations, and we wouldn't have this particular headline, which I'd like to read right now from the New York Times. Hillary Clinton takes a step to the left on health care. Now, you think she took that step on her own? Don't think so. No. It was Bernie hammering her over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, if I was a pundit, I would say this is about pandering and getting his supporters and all that. But I see exactly what you're noticing, which is it really has moved the conversation.
Well, I can't take credit for noticing. The New York Times noticed, and I noticed the New York Times noticing. But
right,
I did predict this would happen.
We've appreciated it, definitely, mm-hmm. that we've noticed the dichotomy, the split between how the conversation on the right and the left has gone, that, you know, in one place it's about body parts and functions, and the other side we're actually discussing bodies and
we'll get to the other side
and how society is affected by all
because
of us.
Since last week things have happened.
Oh yeah, and yeah you're right.
There's a lot of fans that need cleaning, so we'll talk about that. But this story here, just to feel a little bit better. For months during the Democratic nominating contest, Hillary Clinton has resisted calls from Senator Bernie Sanders to back a single-payer health system.
Wait. What is single-payer?
Arguing, it's like what they have in Canada. It's basically where you have health insurance and
it works.
You don't have to negotiate and go to different companies and switch insurance. It's basically, it's like you don't have to worry about it. That's what it is.
Right. You don't have to, like, have some plan that complies with some private company. I just want to be clear on what that is, because we've said it a lot. I don't really think I've ever had it defined.
By the way, as long as we're talking about this, I wasn't going to mention this, but I think we should. It's on topic. You broke your hand last year in Canada.
Yes.
After we moved the 34 sled dogs. We took you by ambulance to a hospital. You had a doctor put a cast on it. You had some follow-up treatment, and the entire cost of all that, I think, was under $1,000 cash.
Well under $1,000.
For everything, including the ambulance
American.
Ride. Yeah. Now, and when you think about it, just the ambulance ride alone in this country can cost thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you're lucky if it is less than $10,000.
Right. Are the ambulances that much better? No, they're no better at all. It's just our system is different. It's wrong.
The exact rate is calculated differently. Yes. Okay.
And there are so many fundamental things, and that's why I'm glad we're having the conversation. But the other part of all that was when we picked up your mail in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. Kyle broke his hand in Canada, had it cast there. And when he came back to the United States, of course, none of his U.S. insurance worked in Canada. It just wasn't even an issue. When he came back to the United States, he had the cast removed and then had some hand therapy, which can you describe the hand therapy, what that basically entailed?
Meeting with a physical therapist who basically helps you stretch and get range of motion and strength back in something that's been casted for a while. And you have various exercises and things for accuracy and also tension, strength, you know, the kinds of weights you can lift at certain intervals are increased or decreased based on your recovery and so on.
So basically you're squeezing things with your hands.
Yeah, manipulating objects, using various devices and things to increase the dexterity.
What kind of device?
They had all kinds of things for grip, like webbing, and
okay.
And weighted, different weight balls.
Uh-huh.
As well as other...
balls. Basically, you're squeezing things and getting your...
Well, and lifting or throwing and catching, like, weighted balls that are, like, certain
okay,
weights.
Okay, weighted balls. I understand what that is.
But also doing other, like, kind of prescribed exercise. And it helps to a degree.
Now, you weren't originally going to even get this, but they suggested, you know, this is probably good to get the motion back. And I think it probably was a good idea. You had, what, about maybe 9-10 of those sessions, about an hour each. And they said probably cost about $100 a session, maybe a little more.
Yeah, it was odd the way I was paying, too. I was paying a sort of deposit on the actual session, but I wasn't getting the bill until much later, obviously. And there was no negotiation and no insurance that was negotiated in the process.
Well, that's the thing. When we picked up your mail in Seattle, we saw a whole bunch of bills from the local medical people here, who I thought did a good job as far as taking care of, well, not really taking care of you, but just basically guiding you while you went and squeezed the various things and did whatever it took to get that range of motion back. And you were paying a bit in cash when you showed up, but then you got financial assistance, and we knew there'd be a balance. We knew there'd be a slight balance. Figured, well, you know, a couple of $100 or something like that. $10,000. They I was laughing as I was opening these bills and looking at them, because it was just as if they were throwing random numbers out. And then there was itemization of the sessions, and it was like they were performing heart surgery all you were doing was squeezing a bunch of balls to get your motion back, and they're basically billing you up the river for all sorts of things, and they're treating you as if you have no insurance at all, when in fact you do have insurance. It just doesn't work outside of your 3-square block area in Seattle.
Right.
So it's worthless, but at the same time, whenever they do submit something with insurance, it's always negotiated down. Well, they didn't negotiate down. They basically rounded way up. And now, it's Stony Brook. I'm not going to pretend it's not. What Stony Brook is doing is not unusual, but it is indicative of the corrupt system that exists with healthcare here. $10,000 to squeeze a bunch of balls to get your motion back, when the entire medical procedure in Canada costs less than $1,000, and that was where the real work was done.
Well, and seeing like doctors who actually deal with like fractures, like, or interpret things specifically, like I went to several different specialists versus maybe one specific specialist. And a bunch of other sort of nurses and technicians that are part of one specialty. Why I should have EMTs, emergency room staff, radiologists, have all these other people be a fraction of what one therapy session or specialists who do outpatient sessions, what that even costs is being so much more magnified and not even getting a say in that. And then having actually some of the people there, like the people that are staffing the physical therapy, telling me that they were worried that I was overpaying just in deposits alone.
Yeah, they have no idea what's going on.
They had no idea how the billing codes were then being transferred out in billing and how I was being characterized in their billing system. They're presuming they're overcharging me, so they stopped as soon as I told them I had made financial aid. They stopped requiring me to submit a deposit. So it's all messed up and does not serve me really in the end.
It doesn't serve any. Well, it serves them, the healthcare industry. But they honestly think that they're charging about $100 for a session.
Right.
In actuality, it's well over $500. And you wind up with this incredible bill for $10,000. Now, I should point out that we're not paying that, obviously, and we're not getting stressed out about it either. But when you think about how the system works, you're taking people who are in duress of one sort or another because they're seeing somebody to fix something health-wise. They're already in a weakened state. Then you hit them with something like this.
Yeah.
What are they supposed to do? You know, how are they supposed to react to that? Obviously, they are in a weakened state and not able to basically stand up and say, hell no, this is completely unfair. That is not how you treat people who need help. You don't victimize them like this. And, you know, there are so many instances that are just jumping out at me. Like, for instance, when you had the cast removed, the doctor there who was like a sports doctor, said, $350 to remove the cast. Seemed like a lot. They sent you the $350 back. We just saw a check for that because they wanted to bill you something like $1,000 for that instead. Somebody said, well, wait, what are you doing here? You're billing him what it costs. No, you got to bill him 10 times what it costs because that's how the insurance industry works. And of course, since you don't have insurance, you don't get to play the game where they negotiate it down. You just get to pay 1,000% more than what it should be. It's insane. It's completely insane. But we are not letting this bug us to the degree. I mean, basically, your mail is sitting in Seattle for months, and we couldn't care less about this.
It's actually better to see it play out,
mm-hmm.
and actually some of the politics that we're seeing play out, because I realize this is a great parallel to the conversation and just to what we're facing, what people, as you said, who are really toe up, who, I mean, you really would not be able to handle a lot of this and sit back and see what, you know, just what they send you and have a little bit of a sense of humor about it. Some people really cannot. And this really, I could see, as you and I have remarked to one another in the past, it could really lead people to dark places.
Think of your grandparents.
Yeah.
If you have grandparents, think of them having to go through this crap. Not a couple of people with spunk like we have who can basically stand up to them and say, we're not playing this game and we're going to expose you for everything that you're not.
And recall, we're independently insured, private, small businesses.
Yeah, we have insurance. That's the funny thing.
We have insurance. Now, if we actually were using it, like, if it actually kicked in, like, if I am that injured and cost enough for my insurance to kick in, I'm probably not having a very good day.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you don't want to see me when my insurance actually helps, because it's a lot just to activate and then and actually start helping me. And, you know, again, locale is a big part of this, too. It doesn't work nationwide. If I'm traveling, it doesn't work. It's pretty disappointing, like, what the offerings are for people like us who would love to have insurance. I'd love to be insured. I'd love to play the game. I'll pay my bill. I'll do paperless. Whatever you want. Seriously, offer me something that works around the world that's for a person like me, an individual, private, person who needs coverage, who's begging for it, but there's just nothing available, and it's pretty difficult to not be cynical, or at least remark at it, have a sense of humor or disdain.
Well,
I think the way it's set up,
we have to keep a sense of humor about this because it's so absurd and Kafkaesque. That
it's crazy. It is really Kafkaesque.
You basically are, and I've said this before, you're paying for insurance. It doesn't work. You're making a donation every month to this company.
That was the best way that I saw. It's kind of like a loan, and then they're sending checks back.
They're not sending anything back. They're not giving you anything. It's not a loan. It's a gift.
Yeah, it is. It's more like a contribution to be a fan of theirs. It's like joining a fan club or something,
I guess.
You know, they'll give you the stickers, they give you the little packets, and it looks like you're a part of something, but it's not.
I have an insurance company here. I'm not going to say the name of it, but the funny thing is that when I call any doctor just to make a routine appointment of one sort or another, and I ask, do you take this insurance? They've never even heard of the insurance, let alone that they don't take it. They've never even heard of it. And the only reason I picked this one was because they seemed more modern and with it than the last one I picked, which went out of business in the middle of the year and left everybody holding the bag. So I thought I'd go with these guys, but nobody takes them. And what are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to ever get any kind of health care if doctors and hospitals just keep dropping and switching and you're supposed to figure it all out? It shouldn't be. So if single payer, it just works everywhere. You know, it's a simple thing. It's not so complicated. It's not so stressful, and it's definitely not so expensive.
So it's healthcare without the shell game of figuring out how to get covered or what job you have to have on paper while you're working three other jobs to afford the fee or whatever. Yeah,
everybody gets the same basic level of access. If you work for a big company, maybe the big company pays for your insurance. If you don't work for a big company, then you pay the insurance, but it's reasonable. It's the same level of care. None of this crap with huge deductibles and co-pays and all that.
Okay. So I think I get it now.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get it.
Hillary Clinton,
I think, might be getting it. To get back to this story.
Yeah. Where does that fit into this?
Bernie Sanders has been hammering Hillary Clinton about backing a single-payer health system, arguing that the fight for government-run health care was a wrenching legislative battle that has already been lost. That was what she was saying. Remember, she said, we don't want to go through that all over again. We don't want to fight the Republicans, basically giving up, saying, okay, we're just going to stop here.
Okay.
But as she tries to clinch the nomination, Mrs. Clinton is lurching to the left on health care, and this week took a significant step in her opponent's direction, suggesting that she would like to give people the option to buy into Medicare. I'm also in favor of what's called the public option so that people can buy into Medicare at a certain age, she said at a campaign event in Virginia yesterday. Sanders calls his single-payer health care plan Medicare for All. What Mrs. Clinton proposed was a sort of Medicare for More. Medicare program currently covers Americans once they reach 65. Beneficiaries pay premiums to help cover the cost of their coverage, but the government foots the bulk of the bill. Mrs. Clinton's suggestion was that perhaps younger Americans, people 55 or 50 and up, could voluntarily pay the full cost to join the program. It's something. It's not what other countries have but it's, we're definitely moving in the right direction, and we need to keep moving in that direction if we're ever going to get there.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some eligibility gap there, like whether you can't afford to buy in, or you would just barely fit in under the sort of minimum income, or you know, your income would allow you to take advantage of Medicaid or Medicare otherwise. And it sounds like it's latching on to the thing that you get as a senior.
Yeah.
That's Medicare?
Yeah, it's Medicare.
Medicare, yeah. Not Medicaid.
Medicaid is low income. And yeah, that's different, but Medicare is for older people.
Okay, so it'd be attached to the federal program for older people, insurance.
Yeah, it's
for
a back-assward
people.
Way of doing it, I think. But, you know, at least we're having a conversation, we're moving in that direction, and we really, really have to do that. I just want to see simplicity. I mean, I'm willing to pay, you know, a premium, and then, okay, you know what, even a high deductible. Tell you what, I'll pay the premium. I'll pay the $500 a month, which is insane, but that's what it costs. And then a $5,000 deductible on top of that, meaning that before they do anything, they have to pay. I have to pay another $5,000. But then after that, 100% coverage, no debates, no nothing. You know that, and it works everywhere. That I think would be. It's not. It's still not as good as what other countries have. But I could live with that at least. It wouldn't take all of this time to figure things out and to negotiate and calculate.
Yeah, I think that deductible is way too high. Like 5,000 is still way too high.
Okay, but, well, you we know, can if negotiate.
If it works worldwide, then I would maybe take that as a concession.
If it worked worldwide,
because I've had deductibles as high as like 7,000 and 9,000. I think my current one for the fake insurance I donate to is like 7 or 9. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
Like I would be really injured if I had if that actually kicked in at any point.
Look, at Stony Brook, all you have to do is squeeze some balls, and they'll charge you $10,000.
Actually, that's right.
Yeah,
I guess it does work, but then
kicks in pretty quickly.
Wow. Okay. So you have to find the right corrupt system.
You see how the game is played now.
You
just have to. You just have to show up.
Wow.
And
no.
the cash register starts churning. Collecting.
Ding,
yeah.
Ding. Yeah. It's like pinball.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The concept is the same. I don't know who the ball is. I think it's us.
Yeah. And yeah, everybody else makes the money. I get it. Gosh. No, but what I do hear in what you said is that we need a foundation. We need like a baseline that then the market competes to lure you away from something that is a baseline.
Okay,
even if it stinks. If it stinks, it's the worst federal system. You know, we can have all the oversight and, yeah, we'll be, like, crazy hardcore about setting it up the right way. And maybe, you know, once it's in place, not everybody goes for it. It's not popular, but everybody has the option. And then the market can compete from that baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Something that, yeah, as you said, maybe it's 5,000. We negotiate a different deductible based on locations or zones of coverage.
I said 5,000, but you know, I'm open to negotiation. What would you like? Tell me what works for you.
I don't think you should pay. You should pay more than like 350, and I think your deposit should be like 3,000.
So 350 for the monthly premium.
And it works worldwide. You know, it should be
and 3,000. Okay, so 350 monthly premium, 3,000 deductible works worldwide. I can't help but think the 350 is just because that's how much it costs to get your cast taken off the first time they tried to bill you for that.
No, I think paying like $6,000 a year is a lot.
Yeah, it is, especially if nothing happens to you.
And if there's a lot of other people who are also paying that, a la a large Medicare for all types, one single payer system, I think that you'd have enough coverage, enough people paying into that to cover the vast majority of illnesses and things. In other words, I think it is possible if it was desirable, like if it worked in a lot of places, I think people would be interested in that. If it was competitive and better than what our options are now, and that's the problem. We do not have good options.
I think people should be treated as a form of infrastructure, okay? Because we keep the economy going. We keep society moving. We basically make history and ensure the continuation of the human race. It's an important responsibility, and I think keeping us alive, keeping us healthy, is in the interests of society, and therefore it should be a part of society, keeping us healthy. Treat us like infrastructure. Where if somebody breaks a leg, it's up to the system, paid for by tax dollars, which come from those same individuals, to make sure that that particular person is fixed so that they can go back to whatever it is they're doing, paying more taxes, whatever. But the point is, you treat us as if we are a part of the system, and then we maintain a certain level of quality.
Instead of letting a private system co-opt that process and create a side industry in broken systems.
Exactly. But you see, that whole analogy breaks down because look at the way we treat our infrastructure for real in this country. It's falling apart. It's rusting. It's decrepit.
True.
We don't even get that. So yeah. I don't know what the answer is. I just know this is not right. This is wrong. This is very, very wrong. And we're going to tell as many people as possible how wrong it is and show them exactly. This is what we're talking about. It's incredible how it's unfolding in front of us. But this is really as good an example as I could have ever imagined.
Yeah. And there are a lot of things that happen as a result. Like, I'm thinking of people being locked into jobs and afraid to leave it because their benefits are so good.
Uh-huh.
Like, there is a lot of lackluster labor out there making everyone's lives miserable because they hate their jobs, but they won't leave to be filled by someone who's maybe a little bit more passionate, mm-hmm. because their benefits are so good. They don't want to leave, you know, they'll stay until they get the watch or whatever. But I think that there needs to be a little bit more, a little less dire a situation for other people out there. And people would then maybe, you know, work in places for more, I don't know, altruistic reasons than, you know, they like the cafeteria meals.
Because they actually like what they're doing, because it's what they want to do.
Yeah, I think that those unintended consequences really do influence and have a big impact, a greater impact than I think we realize on the way our societies and economies work. If it's your economies you care about or society, you know, pick which one, but or both. But I do think it has a huge effect, and there are sort of side effects that happen as a result. Not to mention the side industries in that prey on people in a lot of ways. Instead of supporting them, like you know, maintaining your workforce, like you said, as infrastructure, there's a degree of a solution in that. But we really, I think, as we started out, ought to be thankful that we're in a place where we're discussing this more from a how to improve this perspective and treating it with the seriousness that it deserves, because it mm-hmm. is really serious. It affects a lot of people, and it impacts it is a deciding factor for a lot of people. People will choose their life course, you know, because of what's going on with this. They'll have many different influencers, and this is a big part of it. People choosing a school or a profession or a job.
Yeah, it's even worse than that, because people will pressure their kids to go in a certain path,
yep.
so that they have these benefits and these quote-unquote opportunities, and they'll start doing this at a very early age, basically planning out their career, their college, etc. And it's, you know, I fear it's a losing battle. But when I went to college, the reason to go to college was to learn more, to expand your mind, to find out what it is that excites you, what it is that that makes you want to pursue more and steer you in a particular direction. You had that power. You made that choice. College was where you made those decisions, not seventh grade, not even 12th grade, you know. And these days, we're pressured so much to go to school just to get a job, just to make a career. You know what? You
marketable.
Can go through 5 or 6 years of college, and believe me, people do. And when you get out of when you get out of there, maybe you've changed your mind. Maybe you say, okay, you know what? I want to do something else. Or maybe you want to do something completely unrelated to what you studied in college. And you know what? That's okay. That's great. You're learning, you're expanding, you're figuring things out, and making the world a better place in your own unique way. And I think that's the secret, doing things in your own unique way, not like everybody else does. There's a formula for everything, but it doesn't apply to individuals. Individuals make their own formulas, and I just wish more people had more faith in themselves. Yeah, you know, you might have some tough times. You might have some debt. That's quite possible. Everybody does. But your happiness is not something to sacrifice ever. And I think there are so many opportunities people have to learn more and to explore and to figure out what it is that really excites them, rather than just following the path that others have walked down that's really getting old. So, I don't know. I hope to see more of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are so many cool ways you can be supported and you can realize the kind of dream you have, you know, as a young person. But I think going forward, there's so many people that see where we're failing and that this fixing of these types of as you said, infrastructure. Support, health and health care, I think are becoming a real priority, because that is what we're going to depend on to continue to build or grow as a nation. And it's something we have to address, and I'm happy that we're talking about it.
And the other thing also is prioritizing the things that you pay attention to. And you might say, Kyle Emanuel, you're being incredibly irresponsible. You have this $10,000 that Stony Brook's demanding for squeezing balls with, you know, to get hand motion back, and you should be dealing with that. You know what? The mail was sitting in your mailbox for a couple of months, and we're back now. We've got all the mail here. There are other things that are more important right now. We've got a conference to organize. We've got a magazine to work on. We've got a radio show to do. And when we have time to deal with that crap, we will deal with that crap, and we will deal with it our way. Right now, we've got the money. They don't. They're not going to be getting it from us. So we're going to have a conversation about that, and we're going to figure out what is fair and point to what is unfair. We're not going to let it stress us out, because that's just going to lead to more bills. and you know what? In the bigger scheme of things, does it really matter? Yeah, you've got these people hounding you with one letter a month with an astounding figure, and if that's the kind of thing that gets you upset, I just think there are a lot more real things that should get you upset. For instance, you know, when I was away, I made the mistake of, it wasn't my fault. I was trying to deposit a check into my damn bank. I didn't know my bank didn't exist outside of the Northeast. There was finally a branch in Seattle. I was able to deposit my check then. But by then, the damage had been done, and my account had gone into arrears, and my credit credit line kicked in. What that means is, my checking account goes below zero, and all of a sudden I get a loan from my line of credit.
Right, it borrows against the card.
Yeah, no checks bounce or anything like that. Okay, you know, I was away for a while, and I wasn't checking on that. And all of a sudden, my bank starts calling me 8 times a day. And I know it's my bank because I looked up the number, and it's like, okay, it's this bank, that's my bank. I think I know what this might be. They probably want me to, you know, refill my account. And it's fine. It's not a problem. But, you know, it wasn't high on my priority list. And I found it extremely annoying that my bank is calling me 8 times a day to tell me that I owe them money, when they're a bank that lends people money, and that's the whole point of the credit line in the first place. So, you know, a couple of weeks after getting back, I fixed it, after fixing more important things and not stressing out over the fact that I'm getting 8 phone calls a day, which I'm not answering, by the way. They're just going to voicemail. They never even left a message. They never sent an email, never did anything. Just hounding you with harassing phone calls, probably from a computer.
That would then connect you and, you know,
who knows? You might not even speak to a person.
At all.
The thing is, this is supposed to get you upset.
Yeah.
But why? Why does this, you know, when you look at it, it's a number that's that's of a slightly lesser value than another number, that's your bank account. Okay, that might get you upset. It's just still a number. Then it's a computer calling your phone and making it ring, getting you upset too. Going to voicemail, not leaving a message, I don't care. I just decided to get on with my life, and I'll deal with this when I deal with it. I dealt with it. It's done. No real casualties. Although for some reason the calls keep coming. I don't think their computer is talking to their other computer on a very timely manner. But it's fixed now, so there's no reason to be harassing me anymore. But it's just great that I'm not even acknowledging them. I'm not letting them get to me. And yeah, you know what? Okay, it's cost me like an extra $35 or something. Great. You know, it was worth it. I'd do it again, and I probably will.
That's so interesting the way you're explaining that, because I totally saw how at the end of the day, it's really nothing that they're worried about. It's like a couple digits in some database somewhere.
Think of the things that stress you out. And it's numbers. It's numbers in a computer that no human really cares about.
Right. Like, it's not like there's like a donkey laden with, like, you know, a bunch of silver and rare oils and spices that is, you know, missing en route to the other village.
That's an issue. Or if you got some guy in the mob that is convinced you owe him money and he's coming after you, that's a problem that's got to be dealt with.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a real world problem. But this, it's all fantasy.
Yeah, it's pretty fake. Wow. I feel better. I'm glad we talked about that. Wow, no, I feel so much better about, like 99% of what we have been doing.
Well, I'm glad I forgot all the news stories because it gave us the opportunity to talk about this. So, yeah, feel better. And I hope our listeners feel a little better, too, about the various crap they're going through, because I'm sure you're told about problems that when you just step back and think about it, they're not really problems. You know, there are so many other things that are of more immediate concern, and your well-being should always be top of the list.
Prioritize.
Yeah, prioritize, I think, is always the key. But prioritize on your terms, yes. Not on what other people tell you the priorities are. I did find another story that I was going to bring in that I think is worth mentioning as well.
Well, please do. We have a couple minutes.
Okay. This is a story out of our local newspaper, Newsday. The State Assembly has voted again to outlaw discrimination against transgender people amid the national debate about proposals in North Carolina and other states to restrict bathroom access. See how easy it is? We just pass legislation saying we're not going to discriminate against transgender people. Doesn't hurt. It's easy to do, and it's effective. And that's all that is required of other states. And yeah, it's required. Okay, this is the 21st century now, and we've had it with discrimination. We've had it with ignorance. We've had it with all kinds of idiots running things and intimidating people. This is a fair bill that was passed in our state, and I think a way of life that everybody is entitled to. And what is happening in various states like Mississippi and North Carolina is outrageous. There's just no other word for it. And everybody sees that. And the fact that that so many people are outraged should be enough to alert these folks down there that maybe they're doing something wrong. And if they don't know what they're doing wrong, okay, you know, that's fine. This is what education is for. This is what dialogue is for. You need to see why your thinking is so outdated that it's provoking this kind of reaction. And not cling to some ancient philosophy that is no longer valid. I'm sorry, it's no longer valid. And we're not putting up with it. And there are all kinds of things, all kinds of reactions. The United States is suing North Carolina now. North Carolina wants to sue the United States for suing them. It's getting more and more ridiculous every day. But it needs to be addressed. The conversation needs to be had. And it's not something that's going to go away.
No, it's not at all. And it's important to, I don't know, it's just to see as basically it being used as a linchpin, like a really sticking point that is kind of being thrown into the gears of the political cycle in a lot of ways as something to divide people instead of
actually giving this the time and consideration it deserves. If this wasn't an election year, would we be hearing about this even?
Maybe. Ignorance doesn't take a year off, that's for sure.
But no matter what, I guarantee you the whatever's said that is poignant and considerate of the topic would not be given, it would not be the same as it would be in an off year. We wouldn't have the energy to talk about this, or we'd have more important things to say. But now all of a sudden this is being run out as something incredibly important. We haven't yet evolved in a way, I think, as a society, to really come up with something definitive and other than to deplore people that aren't being considerate and respectful of transgendered individuals. And I mean, it works. I've seen interesting ways. There's transgender or mixed gender bathrooms on campus here at Stony Brook, and I like the way it's laid out. It's just, it shows you what instruments are in the bathroom, like a little symbol of what kind of devices are in there to use. So if you need one or the other type of device, you go in and you use it freely. And I mean, it's so silly that it's now become like this moral sanctuary.
Yeah,
where it never was.
All kinds of fear factors to get people to think in ways that don't apply to the situation at all. But, you know, it's interesting because this is another conversation that we're having now. And these conversations are provoked either by somebody trying to be progressive, like Bernie Sanders has been, or somebody being incredibly ignorant, like Donald Trump has been. And both times, the conversation happens as a result. Now, since last week, Donald Trump has become, you know, the word of the week. I like when a word gets used more than it's ever been used before in its entire history. Do you know what that word is?
It's like something in Sesame Street or something.
But it's a word.
The word of the week is collusion.
No.
Oh, that was last week.
And that word's been used plenty.
Okay.
The word of the week is presumptive.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, the presumptive nominee. No one's ever used the word presumptive before, but all of a sudden everybody's using it.
I think that's presumptuous of you to even say.
Now, that word I hear a lot. So, yeah, so Donald Trump has become the presumptive nominee, and wow, okay, now the storm begins.
It really, its wrath is upon us.
Mm-hmm.
We are now in the general election cycle.
If you think we've been laid back on this just because we wanted to see how it all played out, okay, our laid backness is ending now. We see where it's going. And we're ready for it, and we're going to fight it head on. And, no rules, no nothing. We have to stop this move towards fascism, which that is what it is. But the interesting thing, I've talked to so many people, even conservative people. I don't know a single person that's voting for Trump. I don't know a single person who says, this is the person I want. Who are these people? We have to find out, Kyle, who these people are, what their habits are, where they're coming from. And how do we stop them?
Where they feed, where they nest.
I'm not kidding. It's like some kind of invasion.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. If it's from this world, or if it's extraterrestrial, I don't know. It is. It's a very weird position. I think they're scared, actually. I think they are afraid in public, in society, to speak their support of Trump. I think that the mainstream and the media has really become this construction of more left sort of politics that now basically the right has unified against as a backlash.
Uh-huh.
And in a movement in rejection of how left sort of the, I guess, post Obama administration and body politic has moved, and we're now like basically being thrust the attitudes, but they know it's not safe to speak of this.
I think it's giving them too much credit. I don't think they think that much.
You don't think so?
I think they're just racist and full of hatred and want to spread that around. And we need to stop these people before they do irreparable harm. They've already destroyed the Republican Party, and that's fine with me. I don't care about that. But They will undo everything good, not just the Obama accomplishments, but things before that, and drive us back into the Stone Age. It's this is the threat we face, and that's why it's important for people to get involved and to have conversations and to wake up. But we're out of time, and we can't talk anymore. But you can write to us, otw@2600.com, and share your thoughts. We'd love to hear you.
Yeah, I don't think they're that strategic either. So.
All right. See you next week.
What do you want? Gold? Women? Golden women? Stick with me and you'll have them all.
Every man got a sword and a shield and a knife. Run from the enemy, take away him life. Look to the left, look to the right. Enemies are run like thief in the night. Kill, kill, let blood spill. Kill, kill, the word of the king, no mercy. Show no mercy, sword well sharp and warriors thirsty. 1 million, you're ready. When the smoke clear, pay dead body. Yeah, we fight for the king, we die for the king. If a boy say a word, then a straight slaying. 1 million, you're ready. When the smoke clear, pay dead body. Yeah, we fight for the king, we die for the king. If a boy say a word, then a straight slaying.
When you fight for the iron throne, and you wear that crown, you're under town. Don't play around. So when you fight for the iron throne, and you wear that crown, town, and we not play around. There will be no peace till you conquer the beast. Children die, parents weep, kill another, at the least in this game of throne. Your life cheap. Conquer your city, burn it down with fire. 1,000 rise, 1,000 fall. Fire for the traitor, the spy and the liar. We don't care, kill them all. Them a fight for golden woman, golden woman. That them a fight for. Yeah. All right then. When the smoke clear, we are gonna see who's standing. When the smoke clear, when you fight for the iron throne and you wear that crown, you're under town. Don't play around. So when you fight for the iron throne and you wear that crown, you're under town. Are we not playing?
Kids, Finn with you, Finn's Revolution, until 9 p.m. In just a few moments' time, the legendary bass player of Blue Oyster Cult, Joe Bouchard, is going to be on with us, and we're going to chat about his new record as well as some BOC history. So stay tuned for all that right here on Finn's Revolution on WUSB Stony Brook.
Crisis and the origin of storms. just blessed to hopelessly encounter time, and then came me.
That's right, the legendary Blue Oyster Cult, Long Island's own, right here on WUSB Stony Brook. In a few moments, Joe Bouchard, the author of that particular tune and Cult's bass player for many years, shall be on the air with us, and we're going to give away a signed CD, signed to you or whoever you want it signed to. So that's going to be a freebie. So be ready to give me a call after the interview. And it's a real fun interview. We just pre-recorded it. Now we're going to hear a little something from his forthcoming release called The Power of Music. Right here on WUSB Stony Brook, this is Joe Bouchard.